For Julie Jansen, the arts has always been a form of protest for seeking recognition and justice. And her latest novel, Compassion, isn't just a retelling of frontier history from a First Nations female perspective. It's also inspired by the life of her own great-great-grandmother, Mary Thomas. Like Julie's protagonist, Nell James, Mary was a horse thief in the 1800s. She was also so much more. I spoke with Julie about writing Compassion, and she began with an excerpt.
1836, Bandy Bandy, Prospect Farm, Nullawili Waibala, Yanganai, Marangorai. Spring was a bit cool, but the sun shone warm on our backs. Waratah flowers grew red and juicy, so Nunganai, flying foxes, came to eat. Soft rains fell. I saw a glittering billabong with 100 swimming black swans. I thought, they are Mulgu, whispering my mother's language. One white swan drifted in their midst. My heart cried out to the bird, asking how it came to be amongst the others, so alone and wildly strange. I counted mother swans with fluffy cygnets, while my master loaded his gun to shoot and eat those birds, baked with potatoes in beef dripping. I wondered if the meat would be white or black. The dawn mist slipped into my lean-to and I heard heavy breathing. I shifted on my straw pallet bed and felt a heavy weight on the blanket. I sat up. A dead black swan lay on the blanket, its red beak open and neck oozing crimson blood. The webbed feet, like grey bat wings, dangled over the edge. I screamed and he stood and pointed at me. "A little present for my girlie?" My master, Farmer Bryant, laughed as though he would burst. I was 10 years old and I wanted to kill that man, but Farmer Bryant was sneaky and swift as a snake. I stared daggers into the back of his pimply neck, like maybe I could pop one and watch the exploding green pus. His sweaty pong made me gag. I hid a sharpened stick in my smock, sharp enough to draw his white blood. It was a heavy bundi. It would slide inside his gullet. By touching the point, I felt better. Anyway, a bum-trap constable might get me if I stabbed the master. I'm Julie Jansen, Darug, Burrabarungal woman of the Hawkesbury River. My father's people were from the Hawkesbury River. He always said we're Hawkesbury River people. I'm a novelist, poet and playwright.
And we just heard an excerpt from your latest novel, Compassion. Look, a very simple start. Why did you want to tell this story?
I think at some stage after I'd written Benevolence, a little voice said to me, well, that you've just begun the story of your ancestors from the Hawkesbury River. Why don't you go on to the next generation of women and then end up with a third one? I'm really regretting thinking that at this moment, but Benevolence, I really enjoyed writing that, even though it was quite hard to get published, but Mugabulla were wonderful to work with, and they were very open to me writing a sequel to Benevolence, and so I took the next generation, the next Murrugin from Benevolence, has a little girl who is basically abandoned when Murrugin is starving. And Murrugin couldn't find her again until later on in the novel. And I wanted to find out for myself what happened to that little girl. And the story reflects my great-grandmother's life, but I have very little information about a great-grandmother, so I had to just glean pieces of it in order to write Compassion.
Well, as you said, it's the companion book to Benevolence.
Yeah.
It's a long-awaited sequel for many. But obviously for other people, this is going to be their introduction. Do you think there's anything lost by starting with Compassion instead?
No, not at all. The books do very much stand alone, but it'll be a lot more interesting, I think, if someone has read Benevolence, because there'll be some echoes of characters from Benevolence. I brought back a couple of characters that I quite like. The Reverend Smythe and his wonderful wife, Susan Smythe, So, you know, the pleasure of bringing back characters and introducing new characters. In Compassion, I introduce the wonderful character of the paramour of Nell James, who is the protagonist. Nell James has an Aboriginal lover, and his name is Thomas Freeman. And I really enjoyed writing him. It's often a challenge to write a really rounded male character because I love writing female characters so much, and my protagonists are always female. But I did enjoy writing Thomas. He's kind of based a bit on my brother, who suffered from schizophrenia all his life, and was a poet and an artist and wonderful, zany, fantastic person, big personality, a lot like my dad, Neville. But Brian passed away when he was only 50 after a lifetime of schizophrenia. Mm.
Julie, I'm curious about, because you've made it clear that nothing is necessarily lost, although it is actually, it's a richer text when you've had a chance to read Benevolent. But how do you tackle it as an author? How do you tackle that kind of dual readership of the people that are coming in for the first time?
Well, I do rely somewhat heavily on absolutely brilliant editors. I had Jane Messer, who's fantastic. She's also a writer. And also the lovely Ali Alzizi from Magabala, wonderful young editor who's just going to have a huge career ahead of him. Look, you know, sometimes an editor will say, well, how on earth do we possibly know this happened on the river, Julie, you know, in Compassion, if you haven't read Benevolence? And I think, well, okay, so how do I just have to be try to make them self-explanatory in themselves, and because I don't expect necessarily people will go back and look at Benevolence, although it'd be lovely if they did. But the revelation for me in writing Compassion was that I discovered writing in first-person past tense. And it was just like someone lifted the lid off and went, oh, my God, let all the air in. And it was an extraordinary experience to write in first person. I'm not necessarily going to write everything in that. I wrote Maduka, the River Serpent, in third person. And I'm writing another crime novel for Auntie June now called The Bloody Crow, which will be in third person. But writing the historical novels in first person was just let out. Look, I just decided I didn't care what anyone thought anymore. I just was going to write what I really wanted to write. I don't know how many more novels I've got left in me, so I'm just going to let it rip. And I really enjoyed writing Compassion. It's quite it's quite in your face, as it were. You know, it's rude, it's loud, it's funny, it's terrifying, but it tells the truth also about the history of this country and how this truth-telling is so important for us as a nation to face up to the truths. Anyone who's read David Marr's Killing for Country will realise that the massacres that had happened in this country were systematic, strategic and planned by government. There was nothing accidental about it.
But, like, speaking of nothing accidental, I'm really interested in the power of words for you. The title of Compassion and of Benevolence very much don't feel accidental. Could you tell me a little about the work that they're doing before we even open the books?
Yeah. Well, irony. I love irony. You know, anyone who reads Jane Austen would love irony. I love one thing to mean another. Certainly with Benevolence, I was very, very clear that I was writing about the benevolence of someone like Lachlan Macquarie and his wife in starting up a native school, that while they appeared to be doing good for the natives, they're in fact acquiring the children from massacres after the parents had been killed. Look, I think that the ironic use of language is very useful. When it came to writing Compassion, I thought it would be ironic. And then I'd had a number of meta readers say to me, Julie, your character of Nell, she's so wild and outrageous and a dangerous thief and steals and robs, and what's compassionate about her? Because I already had the title Compassion. And I realised that I wasn't letting out that inner heart for her, which for me, compassion's a really important abstract noun. It's Like if I'm walking around the streets of Melbourne, like I've been here because I'm here for Black and Bright, and there's so many homeless people, and I just, my heart just goes out, you know, I always carry lots of change in my pockets, and I just kind of go think, how come a lot of us are living really well and so many people are living in such terrible desperation? And of course, I spent a lot of time up in Darwin because my daughter lives there. She was born up in the top end in Katherine. And there's so many homeless people, and most of them are Larrakia or Yungul or Alawa people living on the streets of Darwin. And I just, it's heartbreaking. Yeah. So that's why the word compassion is an important one for me.
Mm. When you got that that feedback from your readers about what's compassionate about Nell, what was the next step there?
Well, I had to rewrite it, didn't I? Anyone out there who's a writer and thinks, oh, yes, you just do one draft of your 350, you know, page book and it's all good. Ha! You know, just, you know, you just have to keep working at it and chipping away at it and refining until you actually get the structure right and get the language right and the incidents right. Look, I have to tell this anecdote. I worked with the wonderful Jane Messer, you know, as an editor through the Australian Society of Authors initially. I received a mentorship, which I thought was remarkable, seeing as I was old enough to be everybody's grandma. But Jane, when she had worked with me on the novel for about 5 months, she said, Julie, this novel is a wonderful, great big overstuffed couch. And she said, it's full of stories and anecdotes and characters and language and events, and it's wonderful, but it needs three buttons to pull it together. And I went, what on earth are you talking about? And she said, the buttons are her mother, her father, and her daughter. And it was like an absolute revelation. They were the buttons to pull the couch together. She said, you need to bring up those characters as really important part of the structure of what Nell is looking for. And it was such an extraordinary thing to say. And it was a revelation. I was able to do the final draft and bring all that into play.
I mean, it's so fascinating when someone is able to kind of articulate something about your own work back to you.
Yeah, a stuffed couch, how lovely.
Yeah. And finding those three buttons that need to be brought up.
Brilliant advice. I love editors. They're so good.
Mm. I just want to pick up on something you said much earlier about writing in first person versus writing in third. I mean, I'm curious whether you think perhaps your background as a playwright contributed to your...
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. I sometimes do writing, I teach writing courses, and I think what I do say to up-and-coming writers is to not forget dialogue, you know, to go out and sit on the bus and listen to how people are talking and write it down, write it in your phone, send it to yourself. A lot of really good writers have come from a journalistic background, and for me it really stands out because they're great at description and analysis of something, but their dialogue stinks. You know, just I think reading plays, going to plays, watching cinema and maybe turning on the text so you can read the text of what people are saying to each other is really good practice to get your ears alert to what dialogue can do, because dialogue will really give you a really straight into the heart of a character. If you hear what they say, you know what they think and what they feel. And sometimes I've got an editor who says, I want to cut out, you know, half the dialogue. And I sort of go, do whatever you want to the novel, but do not touch the dialogue.
I have to admit, like, your dialogue always feels very strong, like like it's how people speak. And it's one of those things that it washes over you when you are not thinking about it. But when it's done well, but when it's not done well, oh my goodness, it jars.
It's awkward. Yes, it's awkward. You know, here's the dialogue. Would you like a cup of tea, Nancy? Yes, I'll have sugar in it. Thanks. I mean, really, I mean, just, yeah. You know, Look, it's hard. I'm not saying it isn't hard, but I think people, I am very lucky to have had a background. I went to university and I studied drama. I lived on Weet-Bix, but I did manage to get a very good degree. And we did a lot of drama and a lot of acting, and I was in a lot of plays, and I was in plays like people by Alfred Jarry and Molière. And you learn that dialogue is so powerful. And I think opening your heart to either doing some drama classes or especially impro. Impro is great because you really do pick up on that kind of hidden creativity inside human beings. It's a wonderful way of releasing all sorts of amazing dialogue. And I was lucky enough to work with some wonderful Koori and Guri students years ago when I was writing my play Gunjis. And a lot of that dialogue came from them improvising. You know, they were just incredible. And I kind of then got an ear for what improvised dialogue could sound like. But I owe them a debt of gratitude for that.
The last time you were on Away, you had just released Madoka, the River Serpent.
Yeah.
It went on to be nominated for the Miles Franklin, which, yep. I mean, first, congratulations.
That's... Well, I nearly fell over. It's a crime novel.
I know they don't normally find space for genre on their lists.
No, I was very surprised.
Yeah.
But it was an unusual crime novel, let's face it.
It was, and that's actually where I wanted to go with you, is that I remember we spoke about that tension that exists for blackfellas writing crime fiction because Australia itself is a crime scene.
Exactly.
What has kept you coming back to that genre?
University West Australian Press, Kate Pritchard, I think it was, she said, well, Auntie June's such a great character, of course we need a series. And I kind of went, what? You know, a series, that seems like a lot of books. Anyway, I think that the character of Auntie June really grabbed people's imagination. The novel starts with her stating that she's just got a certificate 3 from TAFE, right? Online studying investigative services. And that's a real thing. You know, you can do it online. I think a whole lot of people have joined up in that course ever since I've been talking about this. And she becomes a private investigator. And it was so kind of like silly, and yet the irony of it was that she actually became a really, really good investigator. So I like to play with that notion of something being ridiculous, but in fact having a really serious heart to it. And I think with the character of Auntie June, I tapped into that. And she's based on a lot of wonderful women that I've had the privilege of working with, especially someone like Auntie Emily Walker, who's a Goombangari elder who passed away last year. She helped me to really create that character just by being herself. Very naughty lady.
I wonder how you feel about the idea of compassion being read as a crime novel.
Oh, interesting thought. The prizes are bigger for history novels.
So maybe more beneficial to...
Crime novel, you just get a plaque or something. You know?
But because it does have that...
Well, she's a criminal.
She is.
Nell. Well, the reason why I made her a criminal, it's hilarious actually, because I'm quite big on family history because I work with Professor Peter Reed on the history of Aboriginal Sydney, .edu.au. Still a website you can go to. It's an amazing website. And I was able in that time to do a lot of research on my own Aboriginal family down the Hawkesbury River. And about that time, I looked up my great-grandma, who I actually knew as a little child living in Chatswood. She used to sit in the sun while us kids played. She was dead by the time I was about 5. And I looked up kind of what her history was. Her name was Mary Thomas. And I found her in Trove, and there were 3 times she came up. First time was in the magistrate's court when she was just not even 20 for stealing 9 fowls. Right? And I thought, oh, okay. And then it came up again a couple of years later. She's in the magistrate's court in Windsor again for stealing a herd of cattle. And I thought, oh, she's coming up in the world. And the fourth time she stole horses, which was a hanging offence in the 1840s and 50s in Australia, 1860s as well. And I thought, what a woman. You know, she's... And each time she was able to talk herself out of being sent to jail, while her male companions, one of them was called Henry Thomas, he ended up in the insane asylum for 5 years. You know, and I wondered, how on earth was she able to talk herself out of, you know. And I figured that she must have just been a wonderful actress and a bit of had a gift of the gab like my dad did and like I've got. You just could talk your way out of situations. And so that idea of what she was is what stirred me to create Nell James. I always change the names because otherwise someone in the family will ring you up and say, it wasn't 1832, it was 1834 or something.
Yeah, I mean, like, it gives you a bit more creative license
if you
can actually.
Oh.
Yeah.
You can do appalling things to people if you change their names.
you've hinted at the potential for a third book. I mean, can I ask you about that?
I think it's a bit premature. I seem to be doing a bit of a sandwich thing, is that I write a historical novel and a crime novel, historical novel, and I'm writing another crime novel now. I'm writing, it's called The Bloody Crow, and Auntie June goes to the Northern Territory to stop the fracking.
Oh, wow.
Good luck with that, Auntie June, but nevertheless, she's going to give it a go. I'm very concerned about the fracking of the Northern Territory. I saw a map which all the Aboriginal communities in the whole of the Northern Territory had a red circle around them that they were earmarked for potential fracking by mining companies. And I thought, why are all the Aboriginal communities got a red circle around them? And you know why? It's because they think they're a pushover, you know? The mining companies think they're a pushover. So that's a very big battle in the Northern Territory. So while I kind of sound like I make light of some of the work that I do, it actually always has a very serious kind of a political, historical subtext to it, you know, that I actually want to change the way people think about environmental destruction, about our history. You know, I'm just the daughter of my dad, who was, you know, a bit of a radical in his own way, and never stopped us arguing politics. We'd, you know, stamping, he'd have his beer, he'd have his cup of tea, he'd have his bread and butter, and he'd have his chop and three veg. And every night it was discussing politics and how to change the world. So I carry on Dad's tradition.
Obviously, you see a very close link between making art and politics.
Well, I just think it's much better for an artist to have a political vision, some kind of something that they stand by, and it can be all sorts of things. It could be gender politics, it could be environmental politics. There's a million different political ways of looking at the world, and they're all valid, all important.
Julie, to that end, what would you like people to take from having read Compassion?
I'd like them to reconsider what happened at the referendum with the no vote, which was absolutely heartbreaking for us in our community. I worked with Yuin elders, Yuwa Brinja Walbunga elders down in the south coast of New South Wales, and it was heartbroken. One old elder, Uncle Bunja, said at the end, I rang him up and I said, how are you feeling, Uncle? And he said, you think we haven't been knocked down before? We just get up again to the next hill. And I just thought that was wonderful because I had an old, my old English grandfather was on the Somme and he'd say, to the next hill as well. Look, I think the idea of the struggle goes on, and I think if you read a book like Compassion, you maybe have some strong and actually historically based information in there about the treatment of Aboriginal people during the period from 1840 through to 1860, especially around the Newcastle and Hawkesbury area. And the fact that there's a lot of stories that haven't been told and a lot of massacres that have not been discussed, and a lot of people need to really know Australian history in order to reconsider how the treatment of Indigenous people in this country, and that there needs to be a period of reparation and truth-telling. Otherwise, we're never going to grow up as a nation.
That was Julie Jansen speaking with me about her latest novel, Compassion. It's published by Magabulla Books and is the much-anticipated sequel to Benevolence.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.